And thanks to everyone who read, let's see, my cheat sheet. Introduce the speaker. I asked Chris to be my speaker. I moved over to Cobb County about 5 years ago, and he was one of the first people I met, and I loved when he shared. And it was just, he would always seem to hit the nail on the head. I've never heard his story before, so I was kind of interested in asking him to be my speaker tonight. And I just love his program. He works. I see him everywhere. And he's just a good example of this program and how it works. So with that, I'll give you Chris L.
Hey, everybody. I'm Chris Lockridge. I'm an alcoholic. if I look nervous, I am. And Sean's over there trying to, I think he's looking at me like this guy's about to run out of the building. I won't run out, but I'm not going to promise you that this can't get weird. anyway, my sobriety date is July 23rd, 2008. Can everybody hear me all right? Can Marge stand back from this thing a little bit? A little bit? Okay. All right. Thank you. July 23rd, 2008, I got a home group in Kennesaw, Georgia. It's called the Kennesaw Big Book Step Study Group. And I have a sponsor and several sponsees. I'll talk more about that later. That's turned out to be something that's extremely important to me. And, you know, when I've been here before. I was here 11 years ago, and that was when I had my last drink 11 years ago. And so I was here, but I was also here as a young kid. I grew up right around here, and I was actually born in California. I'm unfazed by that, as you can tell by the way I talk and everything. So anyway, it wasn't for long. I lived there a couple years, then we ended up moving back out here. But I always like to talk about, I don't do it so much, well, at my home group, let me say this. We have a, one of the things that we do each year at your anniversary, you tell your story. And so, I've done that since I've been sober. I'm not very good at it. I don't feel like I'm a good speaker. But one thing that has come to light to me is that it changes every year. What's important to me this year isn't something that was as meaningful early on. So it sounds different, every year. And one of the things that's come to light here in the last couple of years is that I like to talk about growing up in an alcoholic home. My dad was an alcoholic. And as I've gotten deeper into doing step work and stuff like that, I believe that impacted me way more than I ever thought it did, early on. And so I like to talk about that a little bit. Like I said, he was an alcoholic. My mother would be a great candidate for, like an Al-Anon program. But I just remember, when it talks about, what we were like, one word that would describe me I was just terrified, and all the time. I lived in constant fear of, and I'm not saying this to blame him, but I do believe that it impacts the, we learn certain behaviors and things like that. Bill Wilson even writes about that in the 12 and 12, that we get these old ideas, and I think I got a lot of old ideas from growing up in an alcoholic home. And so I lived, I was always worried about what everybody thought, worried about what, was going to go down when my dad came home each night, just living in anticipation of what was going to happen. strangely, I kind of knew what was going to happen, but I was there. I was a little boy just worried about that all the time. And there was also this thing, this non-talking communication. We did not talk about anything. We just made eye contact and kind of read each other's minds. It's a really strange phenomenon. People who grew up in alcoholic homes seem to identify with that. But we didn't say anything for fear of what the reaction was going to be. And I mean, I continued to live like that, strangely enough, and didn't recognize that till much later. But it was, so there was a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. And I think one of the other things that was important was that I didn't know how to deal with the dualism of this is my dad, I love this guy, but I hate this guy. You know what I mean? All at the same time. And it would later, you know, so my relationship with alcohol goes way back. And I hated alcohol back then. And I have been conscious of alcohol for as long as I can remember. It has always been a part of my life. It's not the way other people talk about it. There's never, ever any fun or never, ever any of that attached to it. It's always anxiety. It was always spoken of, oh my gosh, I hope Sam's not drinking, or I hope Chris, you know, we'll be all right as long as these people don't start drinking. And so it was always in that context. And the thing with my mother is she would, there was this vicious cycle where they were blaming each other and screaming at each other all the time. It was just chaos. And so I didn't want to be around them. I wanted to be out, but I wanted to be with them also. So this kind of stuff was just hard, I think, for when you're younger to deal with the kind of, you know, the contradictions. And now I look back, you know, it seems like being an alcoholic, my life's just full of them, you know what I mean? But even in recovery, you know, it's contradictory, you know, the things we got to do to get better, you know, dying to win, you know, surrendering, all of these things. And, you know, I was thinking earlier, you know, because when I was here, I remember, you know, how bad it felt when I was here. It felt like the end of the world, but it was really the beginning of you know, a new way, a new life, you know. And almost everything, every time I've had any real growth in my life, it's been because everything has been burned to the ground, and I have to it's only then that I become willing to listen or do something else. You know, I think I'm like really a really, really slow learner. I didn't get to AA. I mean, I've been going to AA and been going to treatment centers since I was 15 years old, and maybe I should get on with that, because as I started to go to school, I had this same anxiety. I was always worried and everything. And the reason I'm saying all this is because there was just this buildup, so that by the time I took my first, not my first drink, but the time I got drunk for the very first time, it was such a relief. And and I don't know if I would have, I mean, there's no telling what I would have done if I wouldn't have had that, you know. I'm not advocating that, but it was, things were getting really, really bad by the time I turned 15 years old and decided to take a drink. It took several types of experimentation to figure out, you know, what I wasn't aware of that when I was doing it, but I finally settled in on, I drank, bourbon. I loved drinking. I developed the craving. I mean, immediately after I got drunk for the very first time. I'd done other things, drugs and things like that, but I was always scared. It wasn't the it didn't have the same effect. The effect produced by alcohol was I loved it, and it was it made me feel you know, right at home. So school, home life, this was all just filled with anxiety. And I played sports, you know, the football. But again, my dad was there, and there was lots of, you know, humiliating things associated with that. And so by the time I was about to go into high school, I had a knee injury, and this was another time where, you know, I kind of had pinned a lot of future hopes on this, you know, that this was a some. I was always, if I didn't drink, I was I would get involved with stuff in a way that was so excessive. It was almost like I was trying to get fulfillment from anything, anytime I was ever to string any real abstinence together. So anyway, the deal didn't work out with the sports, and I hadn't done anything up to this point going into my freshman year of high school. My friends started to change, and the anxiety began to build more and more living with my folks and everything. And by the time I eventually did do that, got drunk. I grew up right here in Smyrna, and me and a buddy of mine, we sat down with a pint of whiskey each, and we drank it, you know, in two drinks, you know, and it was a devastating afternoon. I mean, I was blacked out, vomiting all over Smyrna, and laying out in the woods and stuff like that. But for some reason, as much as I hated the experience of alcohol with my dad, and even that, it wasn't enough to deter me. You know, that's kind of my other point, is that I hated this, and it was not something that ever came to mind. I never said, you know, this is going to, you know, result in a life that's like this. And so that didn't stop me, and I began to drink on a regular basis when I was 15. And by the time I was, I guess this was in like 1983 or 84, my first trip to a rehab. I don't know if anybody's familiar with Brawner's. That's where I went for the very first time in the early 80s. At 15, 16, something like that. Most people get a kick out of the fact that I broke out of Brawner's and was tackled as I was running for the Atlanta Road. And so if you were anywhere around here in the early 80s and you saw some guy with pajama pants and, you know, like a respectable, what's the hair that we had back then? A mullet, yes, running down Atlanta Road. That was me, and then I was then put into like this big green bag and being carried back. So yes, that was me, if you happened to see that for then. But I would be in and out of rehabs, Brawner's, several times as a kid, and then as an adult, I came to Ridgeview into the adult program, probably five or six times, all of these places. All together before I was, before I was even old enough to drink. And Brawner's was my first really experience or run-in with a member from Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the counselors there was an AA member, and he made a big impression on me. He wasn't like all the rest of them. He was kind of hardcore and you know how we can be in AA. He fit the bill. He wouldn't let me. I had to go speak in front of an entire school before I could acquire this next level or something like that. I mean, I was terrified to do that. But he saw some value in it, and turns out I've reached out to him later, and you know, to thank him for you know, the beginning, kind of planting some seeds. And he carried us to AA meetings at Rebos and things like that. And I had grown up going to Rebos. My mother had made several attempts to be a member of Al-Anon. So throughout the 80s, I would be there in the smoky room. I mean, so I was exposed to everything. And some of those guys were, you know, kind of hardcore bikers. And one fellow was a guy that drank with my dad, and so I knew him from that. And it looked like at the time that these people were huge figures, you know. Later on I'd find out that they were just struggling along just like the rest of them. I imagined to be these great AA I did some, you know, I've run into other people who knew him and everything, and I was like, man, that guy had to be sober 20 years, and they were like, no, he was only around for 3 or 4 years. And but to me, you know, my perception of everything was has always been a little skewed, you know. And so anyway, into high school, I felt, you know, the growing up in the alcoholic home also made me kind of turn in on myself and kind of be, I was isolated, you know, I didn't want to have anything to do with anybody else, so I was real lonely, and I was afraid to engage anybody, so high school seemed like an unbelievable thing. So what made that worse was when I had that knee injury, I had to go into my freshman year with this giant cast, and it was basically just like a billboard, hey, I'm the guy that I don't want you to look at me, but now everybody look at me. And it was horrible. And but all my drinking and stuff began to progress. And I got my first job when I was 15, and I'll just say, you know, I was able to access alcohol because I worked with adults at my first job, and they were willing to buy alcohol for me because I could get them other things. Some of my friends had, you know, older siblings that sold drugs and things like that. So I was able to access all that kind of stuff and get that for them, which helped me get alcohol and develop this habit. And so by the time I'm moving into, I guess by the time I'm a sophomore, I'm out of public school, in and out of I'm having to go to the alternative schools and stuff like that. So it's just this whole, I mean, I had long hair, and that's hard to believe at this stage of my life that at one point I did, but I was into, you know, heavy metal music and all that. And so that was kind of the look that I had and everything. And it's really weird for somebody who doesn't want to be noticed, you know, to I would go to church, and I would have a black leather jacket on. You know, my mother made me go to church, and, you know, I'm wearing an Iron Maiden shirt with, like, you know, some type of demon on it. And, I mean, you couldn't be screaming, hey, there's something wrong here any louder. You know what I mean? And but it was, but as uncomfortable as all that was. And church, you know, it was real rote, and I didn't, you know, perceive that. You know, I don't want to say properly, but I wasn't getting it, you know, and I don't know that I get it today. You know, nothing has done for me what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. I'm not critical of those, but because I've known other people who had wonderful experiences, you know, with church and stuff like that, but it's just not, there's something about being able to relate to another alcoholic that is, you know, it's a moving, powerful thing. And so anyway, the church, all of that kind of stuff, you know, I was turned off to all that, and drinking a lot. I was having some of the consequences I was having was, you know, my very first vehicle, I totaled that. I drove that right off the road and you know, destroyed, you know, anything that I was, you know, doing at the time. So the evidence was in that I shouldn't be drinking, you know. And by the time I'm getting out of high school, I meet this girl, and I was terrified of girls, and so alcohol was the lubricant that somehow gave me the courage to, you know, approach this person. And this person was a lot like me, and I think that's what was attractive. I think I'm that self-centered that I thought, man, this person. The thought never occurred to me that if she's like me, if she drinks like me and does all of these things, she's actually going to be doing the things that I do. And that's not good, because I'm not, you know, I don't really care about anybody. You know, I'm just looking out for to get what I want. So, you know, I began to, you know, all my relationships the previous to this, you know, people were getting harmed and stuff like that. It was all just a bad deal. But anyway, this girl gets pregnant by me, and we decide to we get married. And the weird part about the alcoholic family that I grew up in, we never discussed any of this. A word was never spoken. You know, we just kind of went through the motions that you're getting married, and you know what I mean? It never talked about any of it. It was the weirdest thing ever. Now, looking back, now, you know, I have children and try to, you know, live by the AA principles and stuff like that. And to not communicate seems like just an amazingly, you know, sick way to live. You know, I don't mean it in a put down kind of way, but that's just the way it is. It's a, and you're not even aware of it at the time. So anyway, her connection. One of the things that I think that was attractive to me, she was in a rehab, Parkview or something down in Atlanta. I can't remember the name of it, but I literally broke her out. I mean, that was how we. I met her behind the cafeteria or something, and so I mean, this is destined to be a, you know, a disaster. But but somehow, because we both grew up in similar situations with alcoholism and stuff like that, it was better than what we were used to. And so we stayed married for 15 years. That first pregnancy didn't work out, but we would end up having four children together. And I'm pretty sure that at least two of our kids are alcoholic, and one of them's not doing very well right now. He had had a taste of real recovery and did good for 2 years, and he's really, really struggling each day. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if somebody got really hurt, or I got a call about him being hurt, you know, and or even killed. And so it's really sad to see that, you know, and not to be able to do nothing about that, just to keep working my AA program, you know, and talking to my sponsor about it and everything. But it, you know, I had to put him out at one point in sobriety, and we were with some counselors later, and he said that she had asked him what the you know, what the turning point was, or what was the most profound moment of your past. And he said, you know, when my dad had to put me out, you know. So at least I felt better about having. I mean, those are the hard things to do, you know what I mean? Because it doesn't feel like it's very loving, but for people like us, it's the most loving, you know. The way you handle it, you know, makes a difference. But some of these things we have to do for people with alcohol and drug problems, it's tough to do. And so anyway, yeah, he's not doing well. I have an older daughter who also has had some time in here, and she began to wonder lately if she needed to be here. And so, you know, that's not, I don't know how that's actually going. She doesn't call me and talk to me about her, you know, her drinking, because our whole relationship for the last 10 years was rooted on sobriety and this program and stuff like that. And so it's kind of sad that I know that as a result of that we're not going to be close. We're not going to have the relationship that we did have, you know, that came from this. And I just know that because of that disease, that they're naturally going to pull away and not be involved with me the way they used to. And but you know, it's not anything that can't be you know, dealt with a day at a time, prayer and my sponsor and working the steps and everything. And anyway, back on track here. So this marriage, you know, one of the things I was also going to mention is that I could stop drinking for periods of time, and I would manage to. But every time I was talking to a guy I work with on the way here, anytime I did that, I became obsessed with whatever it was that was in its place. Like one of the first, after I was newly married, I drive a truck, And so I thought, well, you know, this is who I am. I'm Chris, the truck driver. This is my identity. You know, I think that might be a good way to put it. I was always trying to find out who I was or something. And if I don't have alcohol, man, I'm lost without this solution. So I was explaining how absurd it was. You know, I drove a truck and stayed awake for days at a time, eating speed. And in my mind, I'm like, you know, I'm doing pretty good here. But it was just the evidence that without a solution, alcoholism demands treatment. It just depends, you know, what am I going to treat it with? And so every time, you know, there was another period of my life where I became extremely religious. I mean, and these are all things I hated anyway. You know what I mean? I'd had an experience with a fundamentalist guy at work, and I was humiliated. So my thinking is, hey, I'm going to learn. This is never going to happen to me again. First of all, and it doesn't take long, and I start behaving like that. You know, I'm doing that. I'm embarrassing. Other people, trying to make them feel bad for not knowing about their faith, you know, this kind of stuff. So I just don't know how to make this connection or connect to this spiritual solution. So that went on for years, and that was really a big deal with amends with my wife, because I'd become such a overbearing or religious person at one point. You know, I'm demanding that she continued to have children. She was in no state to be, I'm arguing with priests. I'm like, what kind of priest are you, you know, telling this woman not to keep having kids? You know, I mean, I was a freaking lunatic. And I was more of a lunatic sober than I ever was drinking. When I don't have this program, I mean, I get unbearable. So eventually our marriage after 15 years we split up, and that was one of those things that it was such a devastating thing to me that I didn't know, you know, what I was going to do. I was a single dad. I had the kids, so I'm a single dad, four kids, driving a truck. I go to work in the middle of the night, and I'm trying to figure all this out, but the pressure of trying to figure out how to live, you know, because I got to manage my life, you know what I mean? And so I'm like right in the middle of all this, and I decide that the only thing I know to do is to drink, and I drink, and this set off the craving, and I drank for five years almost daily, and I could not stop, and I put in the progression of it, you know, as far as the amounts and the things that I would do, it was terrible. I endangered all of my kids, as much as I love them and they mean the world to me. When I start drinking, none of that really matters. I throw them in the car. I black out almost every time I drink, and so I endanger a lot of people. But I'm one of those guys walking around talking about I ain't hurting nobody else, you know what I mean? And I can't possibly be safe climbing into an 80,000-pound tractor trailer after drinking whiskey all day and night and then laying down for 4 or 5 hours. You know, I liken my wife, she's a non-alcoholic, and she'll have a couple drinks and she'll say the craziest stuff, you know. She's like, oh, I just don't feel good, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to go anywhere. You know, she, it has the opposite effect. I have a few drinks, and I want to go. I want to drive. All of these things that I think, you know, I can do better. You know, I am convinced of that, and I'm a dangerous. I get very dangerous because I get out on the roads and put people in harm's way. So anyway, this is a tough 5 years. I'm living a double life. I have a new girlfriend because I can't be by myself. you know, because I don't know who I'm in. I'm so insecure and so messed up. I have to find somebody to make me feel better, you know what I mean? And it's all completely self-centered. And so I meet this woman, and she tells me she didn't know what I was doing. She may just be a good candidate for Al-Anon also. I don't know. But anyway, so 5 years of doing this, my ex-mother-in-law comes and, well, what I ended up doing was running everybody away. I ended up sitting in the house all by myself. All the family members have come, got the children, gotten them out, and I'm all alone. And nobody wants to be around me. And it's just the you know, alcoholism is just such a lonely, the separation and the darkness of it all. And there I am, all by myself. And my mother-in-law, who had had a real experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, she's passed away now, and we had lots of ups and downs. But the one thing that she always knew was that if honestly, you know, tried, and Alcoholics Anonymous worked. And she came, and she brought me here on July 23rd, you know, 2008. She brought me here on a Sunday morning, and I don't know why I felt, you know, there was just this little window where I was willing to do something. And so I came in, and I remained pretty willing while I was here. I had a great experience. I know you've seen thousands of people probably, say it, but I remember you and doing all the stuff here. And I remember going through my story with one of the counselors in one of these little rooms here, and they were like, and I was just, you know, just talking about growing up in alcoholism and all this and all of the things. And she's like, wow, that sounds horrible. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? This seems normal to me. You know, it's not a big thing. It would be years before I would ever. I always just thought that drinking, alcoholism was just had some. You know, not drinking makes mine worse. I don't know why, but for years I thought if I'm not drinking, I'm doing all right. You know what I mean? There's something in my head that says if I can stop. If I'm not drinking, that everything's okay. And that is like the farthest thing from the truth with me. And so anyway, I get here and I participate. And I mean, it was a real surrender. I had you got to keep going. And and so I got me a sponsor when I left here. He ended up passing away after 2 years. And I don't even know that, you know, I'm not using that as the excuse, because I don't know that I was doing work in the steps or anything at any real depth. But anyway, he passed away suddenly of a heart attack, and I didn't really do a whole lot to try and find another sponsor. I started sponsoring myself for the next couple of years, and that was not a very good situation. 5 years into abstinence, I wind up sitting at that table in my house again, completely alone. Everybody has left because I've become so hard to be around and so unbearable. I'm so judgmental. When I don't have this program, I mean, you become my problem. You know, I am just so irritated with you. You know, that's what happens. I mean, I had all of these resentments with my ex-wife, and I was just blinded by this hatred. It was such a terrible place to be in, and I couldn't even see it. And I was saying all kinds of I couldn't express anger properly. You know, that's how we are when we get here. And I'm saying and doing all kinds of damage, saying things about my kid's mother in front of them and stuff like that. This is all stuff I had to clean up later, you know, but because I didn't even see it. But I'm doing a lot of damage you know, blaming everybody for my problems. I kind of had this idea that, you know, through some of this, the steps later, I would recognize that damn, I blamed my parents for my life because of this alcoholism. Blamed my ex-wife. You know, she had a miscarriage, and there's this low level, below the level of consciousness, this idea that, do you know what I would have been? I mean, I was destined for greatness or something. It's weird. It's not like it's you know, it's out there, but that's just what's below my, you know, it's inside of me, and I can't get along. One of the things that I read later in the 12 and 12, Bill Wilson talks about that our alcoholism was a result of my not being able to get along with people, twisted relationships. I was like, whoa, what? And then I began to look back and I was like, man, I've never gotten along with anybody. I have never gotten along with anybody. And it's always their fault. We were at a sponsorship retreat we go every year, and everybody in our sponsorship family meets and once a year in Texas, and there's about 300 of us, and the guy that did the presentation, he talked about this, and I really identified with this, but he said, when we get here, you know, our life is a painting, and we look at that painting and we say, God, you know, this is a terrible picture that somebody painted for me. And that by the time, you know, you get, you know, you work the steps and you have a real spiritual experience, you begin to understand that I painted that picture. I had everything to do with that picture. There's certain things that I'm not responsible for, but I'm responsible for how I act based on, you know, that stuff. And I carried that stuff around like a lead ball, you know, and I would pull it out and use it on people. You know, I can be really, really ugly, and it's always with the people that I love the most, you know. It's terrible. But anyway, so I kind of lost my train of thought. Yeah, so I'm here, and let me see. Yeah, I'm all alone. I have to do something, and it's probably the single most important thing I ever did was I walked into this AA meeting and I asked this guy to be my sponsor, and he was not an appealing looking guy. He walked around with a big book, and I kind of just had this feeling that he didn't get along with everybody, you know what I mean? It was weird, but I just had this sense that was probably the right thing to do, and you know, he asked me immediately, are you willing, you know, to go to any length? You know, will you do what I ask you to do, and this type of stuff? And of course, I agree. I was like, yes, absolutely. And it doesn't take, what, a day or two, and I'm already like, man, this guy's kind of extreme. You know what I mean? He's really asking a lot here. And but what happens is that I had nothing else. There was nothing else for me to do. Nothing else had worked. In the book, big book, it says it's in the last analysis, and in the last, I turn over every rock. I mean, I try everything, and this was the last, straw, you know, so I did what he said, and he started me out slow. This was my first sponsor. He, you know, he had me greeting. He had me, you know, setting up the meeting and making coffee and this and that, and none of this made any sense. And I don't think any of it does until you, you know, it's kind of like, it's kind of lived forward. Someone said this, I don't know who said it, but life's lived forward and learned, you know, in retrospect, you know, backwards, you know, you see it afterwards. And that's the very essence of AA, is that this is an experience. I kept thinking, because I didn't have all kinds of experience with, you know, reading and studying, theology and religion, you know, and then that was the key. So that was my idea, that I'd be able to go through all this material and something eventually would click, you know, and then I'd be transformed. I'd be like what these other AA members talk about, and it just don't work like that. And I didn't know that, but he was patient with me. He was smart. Well, he wasn't smart. I'm not going to give us more credit than we're doing. He was open. You know, that's what we are. It's not like we're doing anything here, but if we are open and God will work through us. You know what I mean? If I could set my ego aside, and he was good at that. He just let me go right on into whatever I was going on into, and get in enough pain, I'd come to him and I'd ask, you know, what do I do? Why is this happening? And he would always have this smile on his face, like, man, I didn't know how long it was going to take you to realize, you know, whatever it was. But anyway, he got me really reading a lot of literature and stuff like that. And I don't know, the value of that just seemed to be that I had it available in my mind so I could, you know, pull some of these things up. Not that I was doing any of it to begin with. You know, I wasn't applying it, but I was beginning to be familiar with the language, you know, of AA. And I think that's a good thing because they articulate this stuff like no one else does. So anyway, we're moving along. I'm reading a lot, and we're having, you know, kind of stag meetings, and he's putting up with a lot of my, you know, probably crappy attitude. And then he eventually tells me he's moving. He got a job transfer, and then my there's this new guy around, and I mean, I thought this guy was obnoxious, and he used to mess with us all the time. We'd be leaving the meeting, or my home group meeting, and he'd be there, and he'd say, "Come on, man, you guys got to come out to eat with us, you know, fellowship afterwards." And we both got up early, and we'd be like, no. And he'd call us names. He'd be like, you know, what's the matter with you? You can rest when you're dead. He was just an extreme example of AA. I was like, I don't want nothing to do with this guy. And I don't know why, when my sponsor moved away, I felt compelled to ask him to be my sponsor. It was the greatest, but it was the best decision I ever made, because I think in AA, you know, that's how it works. You know what I mean? Someone's put in your path, and what needs to happen happens, and then, you know, a way will be made. You know, whatever needs to happen. It's hard to live that way, knowing that a way will be made, because I want to manage everything. I want to know how this stuff's going to work out. And so anyway, that was a big deal. And he started sponsoring. I mean, even the way we agreed on terms for sponsorship was different. He said, "Well, we'll make an appointment. We'll sit down and talk, and I'll lay out the terms for sponsorship." And I was like, "Oh, well, all right." So anyway, he tells me all these things that are expected, and he says, "Are you willing to go to any length? Are you willing to do all of this stuff?" And I'm feeling like this is, you know, another extreme case. And but I agreed. And every time I've done that, it has, I can't tell you what has, you know, my life has just been transformed from that. Something about being willing to do that and following through, making. He began to teach me all this stuff that I didn't know nothing about making commitments. He said, "If you don't," he goes, "you just say yes, just make a commitment, then you don't have to figure it out later." You know, that was the kind of, that was the way he talked and stuff like that. I kind of felt like he wasn't all he was presenting him to be. And then we went on our first sponsorship weekend, and I see that this guy's sponsoring all these guys, and I see how serious these guys are and how their lives had been transformed, and that they were just an amazing group of guys who take this serious. They have been given new lives because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like, I'm the luckiest guy, you know, in the world, man, because I didn't know this type of AA existed. But anyway, my sponsor, he's really good with, you know, step work. So, you know, I hadn't had no real gone through the steps several times. I don't know, maybe it takes that. Maybe there's attempts that need to happen, you know what I mean, increments. But anyway, we that was part of the deal, was that we'll go through the steps just like you knew, because if I'm going to be effective, I got to know you on this level. I got to know all this stuff. And that made sense. I said, all right, we'll do it. So we did it, and we're going through we're doing the fifth step, and I've never done a fifth step like this either. This lasted like 8-9 hours. You know, we do everything all the way through 5, 6, 7. We leave, and I'm, you know, you're ready to do your eighth step by the time you leave that day, you know, or make a list, you know, and we've done all that. But I know 6 and 7, these are ongoing things that we got to do. But anyway, he worked with me on the stuff with my ex-wife. And I had a profound experience. It was unlike anything I'd ever known. You know, he pointed out, and it's so simple. I was blinded by my own alcoholism. You know, he pointed out, Chris, all of these things you hate this person for, you've done them. You've done them to her over the course of your whole life. And I never saw it. I didn't know that. I didn't see that. And then I began to see that, you know, that I really can't see the truth without someone helping me. And that's kind of the way I view sponsorship, is that if you're alcoholic, you're not going to be able to be objective about yourself. And one of the most loving things that we do in here is to be able to help someone else see that. You know, I'm not talking about beating people up and talking ugly. I mean, I began to have, you know, relationships with men that, you know, seemed corny. I mean, all of this stuff seems corny and seems uncomfortable, but I'd never given any of this stuff a shot. You know what I mean? I had always, I got this, you know, my mind, I know. Well, how do you know? Well, I just know. You know, I've never tried anything, in an effective way. But anyway, so I, you know, that was a big deal, that experience I had with him on that, with my ex-wife. And that kind of opened up some floodgates. I began to see that this is the way I need to treat or look at all my relationships. You know what I mean? So I started to learn some, the principles and how to live this way. And then the next big thing to fall was I was making amends. He takes that literally. And I think that's what we're supposed to do, is to do this stuff literally. I mean, so I paid back money. I did all the things that, you know what I mean? Somehow I thought, well, I don't want to give up my money. And he reminded me that that's their money. They just want it back. And, so I had lots of experiences like that. You know, I didn't see any of that. But this whole process, you know, it's not something that happens instantly for me, but it just began to unfold, and I began to see that all this is a way of living that it was foreign to me. You know, I'm calling him, hey, you know, I want to kill my wife, or I want to punch her in the head, she's driving me crazy, you know, and we talk through that, you know what I mean, and we get, you know what I mean, it's weird to have to be in an argument and you're in a disagreement and I'd say, Can we stop this for a second? I got to go call my sponsor. You know what I mean? And so, but that's where I had to start, man. I had no real skills growing up the way I grew up, and I don't know. I think that part, growing up in an alcoholic home, makes an alcoholic a little harder to get this stuff. You know, because I am. I'm 45 years old, and I don't know how to have an appropriate relationship with anybody. You know, I don't know how to do any of that. You know, I the way I get what I want is I try to make you feel bad. You know what I mean? I mean, there's like all this nonverbal communication I'm sending, you know, and she's doing the same, and that's a terrible, terrible way to live. Eventually I have to drink when I live like that, because I can't take it. But anyway, I had a great experience with that. The next big thing to fall was going to be, and I had to set aside my ideas about God and all of that stuff, you know, because I knew too much. I knew it all, you know what I mean? And my first sponsor was really good. He said, look, just set that, don't even think about that. And that's what happened as I continued on with the process. You know, he said, are you just willing to believe that there's a power here in Alcoholics Anonymous that can do for you what you can't do? I mean, your life's looking real good. I mean, can you at least admit that you're killing it on your own? And you know, that's what I had to do. And I set all that stuff aside. And I had a lot of stuff with my past, with the religious stuff and everything. Not putting it down, I'm just saying for me, some of it was tough for me to wrap my head around. And so I set it aside and moved forward. And as we moved forward, a new ideal began to develop. I began to see how this power operates through Alcoholics Anonymous, how it operates through me becoming intimate and with another alcoholic. You know, things come out of your mouth that you don't know where they come from when you make yourself available, when you speak the language of the heart, and when that happens, when you open yourself up to that, you begin to be you get a new vision like you've never had before. And then what I was getting at, the next thing to follow was I was too scared to sponsor anybody, but that's what he started talking about. You know, he's like, hey man, you got to carry this message to somebody else. And I was like, oh no, I can't do that. And eventually I did do it. Well, you know what? Both my sponsors, they would send people to me. You know what I mean? They got this whole gaggle of people, and he'd be like, they'd send them to me. You know what I mean? I was kind of forced to do it, but I got better. And he's like, look, what are you going to, you're not going to hurt anybody. I mean, you know what I mean? We're not, it's not like that. You know what I mean? We're trying to get better here. And so all of the excuses I had were really out the window. And I'm going to say that's what I was going to get at earlier. You know, sponsorship has been the biggest thing. It's the vehicle. It's the vehicle to everything. Because I don't really want to open up. I really don't want to be in relationship. You know, alcoholism for me was all about, you know, being separate. Alcoholics Anonymous is about unity, and a whole life to become a whole person. You know, for me, it's worked perfectly. You know, unity and recovery, and service. Those three things. When I try to integrate those three things in my life, and I had moments where I was an extremist in that way. You know, I was doing more AA than I should be doing, and not being available at home to my family, and all that plays out. And the beauty of AA is this has all already been recorded. Bill Wilson, they've had all these experiences, all this stuff. He said he's already written about us being over the top, you know, in all these chapters that I didn't need to read because I knew all this stuff. You know what I mean? But as I began to see that, and what really happened is I kept thinking that if I'll read this, I'll get this, but what happened is I had an experience and it confirmed what was in the book. So I had to, it's experiential, and because it's that was the next thing that I could never make this connection, and through what's happened here, this spirituality is dynamic, you know what I mean, and it depends on me being engaged with you, and there's no other way to access it. I have to be engaged in that process, and it has been the single greatest thing ever. The last 6 years of my life have been the greatest ever. I mean, it's been like no other. I had no idea what life really, you know, what it was all about. I was clueless, you know. But for the first time ever, I think I have some semblance of being happy and all of that. And, you know, it takes all of this stuff. I mean, you know, you're starting out here or whatever it takes, you know. But being at the bottom is a good place to be as far as I'm concerned now, because that means maybe you'll be willing to listen to somebody else if you're like me. Mm. So I guess I know everybody else in my life is happy because of it. You know what I mean? That's the strange thing, is that, hey, they don't not want me to participate in this because their lives are way better because I'm not, you know, who I used to be. And none of that was malicious. I didn't do it intentionally. We just don't, you know. But it's hard to know. You got to know what the problem is. You got to know what the solution is, and then you got to know what the program of action to get to the solution is. And I never knew that before. So anyway, I'm a walking commercial for, well, not in any way of breaking anybody's anonymity, but I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's changed my life. It brought about a real transformation for me. You know, other people might not think that, but believe me, I know inside that I'm not the same person I used to be. And my wife will concur. My kids will concur, because I had to run them off, and I'm just not the same person. And I think if you honestly, you know, approach this and you're open-minded, you know, get a sponsor, you know, you don't just get anybody. I mean, you know, the people like us in here that aren't healthy are crazy as can be. So you do gotta make sure that someone any message I have is, man, get a sponsor and start trying to work these steps. And I can't think of anything better than this, you know, AA. And thanks for having me here. And thanks for having me here 11 years ago. You know?
Thanks, Chris. That was great. Yeah. I don't know what a vehicle is, but yeah. I love when he shares at meetings. I see him about three or four times a week.